Well, the start of a new year is a good time to take stock. And lots of our papers and magazines have got celebrities and others telling us what their hopes and fears are for a new year and the changes they're going to make. Last Sunday, this was an article I came across written by a 25-year-old. And she had found the diary she wrote as a 15-year-old. So what did she intend to achieve in those 10 years between 15 and 25? She writes, these included, own a house in Notting Hill, be a successful TV presenter, be engaged, own a pink Audi TT. She goes on, I am 25 and a half, single, unable to pay my rent, and the closest thing I own to a car is a broken skateboard. She talks about the anxiety attacks and the struggle she's had with that and the pressures of life that bring those on. She goes on to say that she posted these concerns on Instagram, and within a very short time, her inbox was absolutely full with friends saying they had felt lost, anxious, or unfulfilled. I appear, she says, to have it all. I am healthy, with a good job, close friends, a loving if dysfunctional family, and yet I feel lost. She concludes by taking comfort in the fact that there is a community of people that she is clearly a part of and identify with her. And she decides that for 2019, she'll take a small step towards the Audi TT and she'll try to pass her driving test. Making sense of life. Some of those struggles that she experienced may be yours, but you all have others, won't you? And that, of course, is not to take into account any of those sort of bigger world struggles and confusions. Many of the proxy wars around the world in Syria or Yemen. The rise of these strongmen dictators who are lauded and support one another unconditionally. The lies and corruption that undermine democracy. And wondering what on earth is China planning to do on the moon? Big questions. So, how are we going to chart the unknown and unnavigated waters of 2019? How are we going to make sense, not just of today, but of the weeks and months that lie ahead of us? Well, as we heard on the introductory video, the wisdom literature in the Bible, books like Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Job, and other places, are written to help us to do that, to know how to live in God's world, this practical wisdom. So, first of all then, Proverbs is written. Chapter 1 will help us to know the meaning of life. That's verse 7. Hopefully you've got a note sheet that will take us through. So let's look at verse 7, the meaning of life. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So, very simply, make sure you've got God in the right place. You see, wisdom literature says you can only make sense of living in this world if you're listening to him. You can't make sense of this world without him. It's his world, therefore pay attention. Recognize him for who he is. Give him his rightful place. Respect the position that he has. Reverence and awe were words that came up on the screen, weren't they? We need to acknowledge that he's in charge and we're not. He knows best and we don't. Have you ever had that embarrassing experience of talking to somebody and going off on one about something and discovering later that they were a renowned expert in the topic? You ever had that experience? I remember we had some friends over for supper on one occasion many years ago. And my father had given us a bottle of wine, and it was quite nice, and I was talking about how nice this wine was that Dad had got. This couple who were having supper with us were, on one hand, very sort of well off. They weren't worried about the sort of level of bottles of wine that I was buying. But even worse than that, her brother was a wine importer. I discovered that sometime later. And that's been a continual source of prickly embarrassment and discomfort that I'm sure you know as well. So the fear of the Lord is knowing who's in charge, making sure God's in the right place and we know who we are in relation to him. Creatures, servants. And wisdom here is not just common sense, although there's a lot of common sense in the book. It's rather recognizing that it is God and his words that will prove the faithful guide through this world. Now, it may be that you're sitting here thinking tonight, well, actually, my life is making no sense to me at all. And I don't want to say this in a disparaging sort of way, but maybe it's time you took the Creator God and his word and words more seriously. You've got nothing to lose, have you? Why not give them a go instead? We've got some occasions and courses coming up that will help you to do that. Look out for them. And it's worth noticing that this knowledge or wisdom of verse 7 comes by revelation. Just glance across to chapter 2 and verse 6. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. You see, we can't get there by ourselves. I'm sort of catching up on some of my favorite sort of Scandi TV that I missed over Christmas. And one of the things that I've begun watching begins with this group of people who've gone to this sort of island in order to discover themselves, in order to work out what wisdom and knowledge are about, what they need in order to make their lives better, to become the sort of people that they'd like to be. But they can't do it. It's only possible. Knowledge and wisdom only come by God's revelation as he speaks. Now, of course, Solomon and the others who contributed to this book and the other Old Testament writers can only get us so far. They can't give us the full story. Alex, let's have that slide up, please. The full story of the revelation, the full story of wisdom and knowledge, is only to be found in the Lord Jesus Christ. So in the book of 1 Corinthians, Paul talks like this. For Jews demand signs and Greeks seek wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and folly to Gentiles. But those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. And a few verses later, he is the source of your life in Christ Jesus, whom God made our wisdom and our righteousness and sanctification and redemption. Jesus is the wisdom we need. And that's terrifically encouraging, isn't it? Because we're not talking about some sort of institution or system or impersonal thing. We're not talking about a Google or a Facebook or a powerless call center. We're talking about a person who has walked on this earth and knows all of its pressures and all of its temptations. This person, this Jesus, is to be our wisdom. But don't make the mistake of thinking that you can start with Jesus and then move on to something else. Yes, he's good to get you going, but once you're going, there are other paths to follow and other places to get to. Now, this weekend has seen the third round of the FA Cup, a very exciting weekend as the higher ranked teams join in and mix up with some of the lower ranked teams. And Phil Case, please stand. Come up here and please stand up here. People won't see you down there. Alex, you can kill that for the moment and take that away for me. Thank you. Does anyone know what this shirt is? Oh, you've briefed them very well.
The other fans up there.
And what did Gillingham do yesterday?
Beat Cardiff.
And which division are Cardiff in?
Some Premier League.
And which division are Gillingham in?
League One.
Just for the moment.
Yeah.
And that's terribly exciting, isn't it?
Season.
And you were there, weren't you?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Enough. It's very exciting. And there were lots more exciting results today as well. Very exciting. But of course, on Monday night, it's the draw for the fourth round. Then it'll be the quarterfinals. Then it'll be the semi-finals. Then the final. Then the trophy will be presented. We move on from the third round through to the final, don't we? But that's the mistake we can make when it comes to Christian things as well. Some of you have been around the Christian scene a while. You will know Christian leaders to whom this has happened. They began well. They began comfortably in the sort of company that we share tonight with Bibles open. But sadly, they have moved on from those days. They've left behind the reality of the person of Jesus and the words of this book. And they're now a threat to the gospel and the life of the church. So don't make the mistake of thinking this is something you move on from. This is to be the guiding principle of our Christian lives and our Christian walk. Only with Jesus have you got any hope of a life that makes sense. So maybe it's time you looked at Jesus for the first time. Maybe it's time, having had a wander, you come back to him and re-engage. Verse 7 tells us how to live well. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So let's look at verses 1 to 6 then. A life of learning. And these verses pose a question to us. Are you teachable? Because this wisdom that is on offer is for anybody who wants it. Notice what wisdom provides in those opening verses. Instruction, insight, wise dealing, prudence, understanding. And as we said before, this is practical. This is dealing with everyday life. She wants you to be streetwise. She wants you to understand the ways of the world and live well in that world. And in a sense, challenge that world, bring it back to the words of its creator. And she promises much for those in need of her. So look at verse 4. She promises to give prudence to the simple. The simple here is one who is gullible, one who is easily led, slightly naive, maybe even morally willful or irresponsible, wanting to sort of to push the boundaries, wanting to experiment and try things just to see. Elsewhere, the simple is described as one who acquires folly because it's fun. Why not? In chapter 7, the simple is aimless, drifting into temptation, courting temptation. And then verse 4 continues. To give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. The youth is one who is vulnerable, not yet formed. They need to be helped as they grow up, to grow up in the way of the Lord rather than the way of the world. But notice this is applied as well to the wise and the understanding in verse 5. That the wise hear an increase in learning, the one who understands obtain guidance. You see, you never grow beyond such teaching. Absolutely critical. This is the guiding principle for life, for all of life. We need that constant reinforcement. We need our engagement with the word and words of God, such that we have the ability to stand against the words that come from elsewhere. Lifelong learning is a bit of a jargon phrase these days. Even us clergy are subject to ministerial development reviews, and part of that is a question about training and courses and all that sort of thing. So So none of us gets to the point where we don't need further instruction, where we don't need more engagement with the scriptures. And it's one of those things in church life I find sort of quite troubling, that we're happy to entrust the care of our children on a Sunday morning to folk who don't necessarily get the opportunity to be part of a gathering where the Bible is taught. They don't necessarily come under the sound of the preached word as the rest of us can. It troubles me too that you'll sometimes be talking to folk about their Christian walk. And what you discover if you listen carefully is what they're talking about is stuff that happened a long time ago. Maybe a youth group they were part of. Maybe a camp that really influenced them. But they don't talk about anything recent or current. And some of those church leaders who I mentioned earlier, they would speak fondly and warmly and gratefully of that past camp or youth group. Now, this must be a current, today experience, because we are all always vulnerable. So we need that continuing instruction. We need a continuing engagement with wisdom. Because as we know, we never come to the end of Jesus. Knowing him, living for him, understanding his goodness and kindness and grace towards us. So this wisdom is for anyone who wants it. So let's ensure that we're committed to lifelong learning. Let's make sure we are teachable. That means you must choose carefully to whom to listen. So verses 8 and 9, listening at home. This is the first of the sort of the talks, if you like, of the father to his son. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching. The closing two chapters of the book, we engage the mother's teaching. For they are a graceful garland for your neck, for your head, and pendants for your neck. Now notice where the responsibility lies. The responsibility lies with the son, with the child, doesn't it? Hear, my son, forsake not. The responsibility is the child's. So maybe you're a youth in age, maybe you're a youth in your Christian experience. Make sure you are teachable. Make sure you're listening to wisdom through the Christians, the Christian parents, the Christian youth leaders, the others who God has put across your path. Because wisdom has all the instruction, all the insight, all the wise dealing, all the prudence, all the understanding that you will ever need. Now, it's interesting, isn't it, that whenever they do a survey of late teens and 20s, and the greatest influences on their lives, the answer is always the same. It's always parents. It's always home. Because that's where we pick up our values and our expectations. Even if we've never been sat down and told, this is how you should live. It's just there. We absorb it. It becomes part of us. And that is true of the church family as well. Not all of us would have had the privilege of growing up in a Christian home where both parents were able to both teach and demonstrate and live out what we're talking about here. The church family supports them in doing that. The church family plays its part. And for some, the church family is the group that does that. So wherever you're looking to an older, a parent, a leader, make sure you're teachable. Make sure you've got open ears. Now, obviously, as olders, as parents, single parents, whatever, we have a responsibility to live and speak rightly and take the opportunities where we can. And so we must. But if your situation is one where the children are not responding, not in good spiritual health, maybe they've quite openly rejected Jesus and the gospel, then don't blame yourself. We're all responsible for the decisions that we make in and of ourselves. Keep praying. Keep taking opportunities when they come up. Let's have that slide up again, Alex, please. Because we want our homes and our church family to be a place where Jesus, the power of God and the wisdom of God, Jesus, our wisdom and our righteousness, is known and taught and lived. So let's listen at home. But if that's where we're going to get good instruction, there are also contrary voices. That's verses 10 to 19. Sorry, it's not verses 10 to 9, is it? Yes, it is, verse 10 to 19. Here's the contrast. Verse 10, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. There will always be competing influences. This is the pressure of everyone else is going. Everyone else has got one. Everyone else has tried it. Now, the gain here seems to be principally financial. Have a look at verse 13. We shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Verse 19. Such the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. And there is a cost to others. Verse 11. Let's lie in wait for blood. Let's ambush the innocent without reason. But this is how the gang works. This is how the group works, isn't it? It'll be great for us. And the sense in which we've all been there, this is a growing up thing. And what we have to decide in those situations is how we're going to respond. How we're going to weigh up the instruction we've received with the pressures of this particular moment. Yes, you can take that down, Alex, now. Thank you. How are we going to put into practice the insight that wisdom has provided for us? Look at verse 15. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths. What does that look like? Well, let's go back to Monday night. I'm sure many of us were at parties on Monday evening. At what point were you able to say, did you say no to another drink? Enough is enough. When we're enticed, do not consent. Or when you've been faced with an Instagram post or a Twitter comment that you've objected to, found personally uncomfortable, and you've wanted to strike back and make your point, well, that's seeking to harm others, isn't it? That's making haste to shed blood. What about that next team meeting you've got at work? Will you seek to gain more credit than is due to you? Or will you make sure that the others around the table get full recognition for what they have done? How will you apply the insight of not being greedy for unjust gain? Wisdom is practical. And the problem of the lure of the gang is that it always looks more attractive than wisdom of home or of church. But what our author does here is to help us to see the consequences. Verse 18. These men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. Somehow, in God's universe and the way things work, this all gets turned back against the person who is seeking to gain in these ways and to lift themselves up to these new levels by themselves. The shocking conclusion is that the gang proved to be laying a trap for themselves. And you'll notice in verse 19, this applies to everyone who behaves like this. The threat is there. I can think of a friend from a previous church who was on a business trip, and he accepted the offer of after-dinner entertainment. And for some years was worried that as a result of that, he had caught a sexually transmitted infection and had passed it on to his wife. To go with a gang, to want to find your place there, to be impressive in that sort of situation, is to reap a reward. To reap a reward of finding yourself trapped in a lifestyle or its consequences. So you need to think ahead. You need to work out how you will handle these situations, how you will apply the principles of wisdom to these everyday situations. Now, we are in such a better and more strong position than those who received Solomon's words, even than Solomon himself, because we have God's Spirit living within us to bring us his wisdom, his insight, his understanding, and to strengthen us to follow and walk in his way and to stand against the temptations and the ways of the world. Because as we know, there are many influences out there, many voices to lure us to choices and decisions that will have lifelong, maybe even eternal, implications. So let's be wise to the lure of the gang. Can we have that up again, please, Alex? Thank you. So what sense is life making to you at the moment? What sense are you making of life? Are you feeling lost, anxious, unfulfilled? Are you wondering where on earth those last 10 years and all the things you were hoping to do in those 10 years have gone? Well, Solomon would say to you, go back to the beginning. Remember that lifelong principle that if you want to live well in God's world, if you want to enjoy all the benefits of life in God's world, then we go back to the guiding principle that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Jesus is the power of God and the wisdom of God. Jesus is our wisdom, our righteousness, our sanctification, and our redemption.